Hello everyone, and welcome back to another episode of our Finals Countdown series, which is, as always, brought to you by MedTalks. In this series, we're providing all of you wonderful medical students, in other words, the future of our healthcare, with short, succinct, and super useful revision talks across multiple specialties to help you with your revision for exams and generally for life beyond as doctors. Now, guys, you should know that we are in the endocrinology section of our revision series, and in the previous talks, we've spoken all about diabetes, that's both type 1 and type 2, and we've looked at a complication, the most severe complication of type 1 diabetes, which is diabetic ketoacidosis. Now, in today's talk, I'm going to be covering another common complication of either type 1 or type 2 diabetes, and that's when the blood glucose goes the other way, which is hypoglycemia. Now, this talk was actually recorded a couple of years ago, and it was part of our Junior Doctor's Guide series, looking at how to assess a patient who presents with symptoms of hypoglycemia. But the approach is the same. We give you a real-life clinical scenario, and then we look at how to tackle the scenario, looking through the clinical features, the causes, the diagnosis, and then the management of hypoglycemia. Now, guys, we've got lots of other revision episodes from other specialties. So we've done cardiology, respiratory, gastroenterology, neurology, ophthalmology. So go over and check those ones out if you haven't already done so, especially if you've got exams coming up. These episodes are really useful if you're on the go, if you're driving or commuting to hospital placement, or you're just out for a walk and you want to do a bit of revision, then these episodes are useful, if I do say so myself. But please, we would love your feedback. So if you can leave us a review on the Apple Podcast platform, or if you can message us on Instagram, medtalks.uk, or even email us at hellomedtalks@gmail.com, that would be really helpful. We'd love to hear your feedback. We'd love to answer any of your questions or queries, or even if you just want to chat, then please do get in touch. Right, now without further ado, here is the episode where we look all into hypoglycemia. Enjoy, guys. Hope it's useful. In this talk, I'm going to be covering another commonly faced scenario, especially during an on-call shift. But do note that this scenario can potentially happen at any time.
Hi there, this is Sayo, the FY1 on-call. Did you bleep me? Oh yes, doctor. I've got a patient here. Their blood sugars are only 3.1. Oh dear, okay. Could you tell me a little bit more about the patient, please? Yes, sure. So this is a 78-year-old female who was admitted 5 days ago due to a urinary tract infection, which she's been on intravenous antibiotics for ever since. She's got a past history of hypertension, type 2 diabetes, and COPD. She's not really been eating and drinking very much over the last couple of days, and she doesn't have any IV fluids written up either. Her cannula is also not working at the moment. Okay, what is the patient taking for the diabetes? So, looking at the drug chart, she's on metformin and glycoside. Okay, and what's the patient's latest news score? So she's currently newsing at 2 due to a low blood pressure. It's 95 over 60 at the moment. Is that normal for her? Oh yes, she's been hypotensive all day and her new score has been 2. Right, okay. Is she complaining of anything at the moment? Does she seem confused or more drowsy than normal? What is her current GCS? I think she seems a little bit more drowsy than normal. So I'd be really grateful if you could come and review her, because I'm quite concerned. Her GCS is 14 because she's only opening her eyes to voice. Yes, sure. I'm just seeing another patient on a different ward, but I'm almost done here. I'll be there as soon as I can. Could you also prepare an IV cannulation trolley for me so it's ready for when I get there? And finally, before I go, could you give me the details of the patient and the name of the ward that you're calling from? Oh yes, of course. So the patient's name is Mary Sugar and her hospital number is 123-45678. Her date of birth is the 1st of January 1932. And I'm calling from England ward.
Okay, so that's an example of a handover that you may receive regarding a patient presenting with what is called hypoglycemia, or a low blood glucose level. Now, let's dive deep into the world of hypoglycemia. Hypoglycemia is potentially a life-threatening condition which needs urgent recognition and correction, and its definition is split into 3 components, which form the Whipple's triad. So firstly, plasma hypoglycemia, where the normal range is between 4 and 5.8 millimoles per litre. Secondly, patients having symptoms which are attributable to a low blood sugar level, and we'll talk about these symptoms shortly. And thirdly, the resolution of symptoms with correction of the hypoglycemia. So Oxford Medicine state that hypoglycemia is defined as a blood glucose less than 3 millimoles per litre. However, the Joint British Diabetes Society's Diabetes UK state that a blood glucose level of 4 or less in hospitalised patients with diabetes should be treated if they are symptomatic. Right, so we've got the definition. Now let's think about why it occurs. The most common cause is due to excessive insulin or oral hypoglycemic medications such as sulfonylureas, coupled with reduced oral intake and possibly increased levels of exercise. Other causes include alcohol, and this is the most common non-iatrogenic cause in adults, other drugs such as quinines or pentamidines. Rarer causes include pancreatic endocrine tumours such as an insulinoma, adrenal tumours or autoimmune hypoglycemia. There's also starvation, sepsis, pituitary insufficiency, and malabsorption, so patients with celiac disease, gastroenteritis, and previous bariatric surgery. So how may a patient with hypoglycemia present? Well, the presentation can vary dramatically. Sometimes patients, especially those with diabetes, can recognize when their sugar levels are dropping, and so they'll top themselves up with a biscuit or a few sugar cubes. It's more difficult to assess in children, who may not show obvious signs, but may appear more lethargic. Patients who are hypoglycemic can commonly be mistaken for being drunk due to their similar presentations. So, there are signs and symptoms which can be split into three areas. The first area is autonomic, so patients may be sweating, they may have palpitations, a tremor, and feelings of hunger. Secondly, there's neuroglycopenic, so confusion, drowsiness, altered behaviour, speech issues, and incoordination. And thirdly, there's general symptoms such as nausea and headaches. The most worrying signs of hypoglycemia are a reduced GCS, recurrent episodes, loss of awareness of the hypoglycemia, and hypoglycemia in a non-diabetic. So, non-diabetic hypoglycemia is not a common presentation. And as we mentioned earlier, the most common cause of hypoglycemia is excess insulin or oral antidiabetic medications. In non-diabetic hypoglycemia, there are two types. There are two main types. There's reactive and there's fasting. So reactive hypoglycemia may occur in those patients who are at the pre-diabetes stage or at a high risk of being diabetic. And here, the body struggles to make the right amounts of insulin. Other possible reasons may be stomach surgery, so for, as we said, previous bariatric surgery, which means that the food passes too quickly into the small intestine. Also, rare enzyme deficiencies, which make it hard for the body to break down food. Fasting hypoglycemia can be due to certain medications, such as pentamidines or quinines, which are used to treat malaria. Also, alcohol binging, severe infections or illnesses, an insulinoma, so a rare tumour in the pancreas that makes excessive amounts of insulin, and also low levels of other hormones for various causes, such as low cortisol, low growth hormone, and low glucagon. Right, so now it's time to head over to see the patient. Whilst you're on the phone with the nurse, make sure you get all of the patient's details, so their name, date of birth, hospital number, and what ward they're on. Have a quick look at their latest observations if your hospital has a digital system, which you can view from any computer, and look through their previous pathology and imaging results. Now let's go through assessing the patient with the A2E method. But before we get on to talk about that, I'd just like to mention the sponsors of this episode. And this episode is proudly sponsored by BetterHelp, and that's help as in H-E-L-P. And guys, for all of you listeners who are medical students and are feeling stressed with revision and upcoming exams, sometimes this can get quite overwhelming, and we have all been there. If you feel like things are getting a bit much for you, then BetterHelp offers licensed therapists who are trained to listen and to help you. You can talk to a therapist in a completely private and online environment at your own convenience. There is a broad range of expertise in BetterHelp's 20,000 plus therapist network that gives you access to help that may not be available in your area. And all you have to do is just fill out a questionnaire to help assess your specific needs, and then they can get you matched with the therapist in just under 48 hours. After this, you then schedule a secure video and phone session. Plus, you can exchange unlimited messages and everything you share is absolutely and completely confidential. You can also request a new therapist at no additional charge anytime. Join the 2 million plus people who have taken charge of their mental health with an experienced BetterHelp therapist. And just to make things even better, there is a special offer to all of you MedTalks listeners. You can get 10% off your first month at BetterHelp by entering the URL betterhelp.com/medtalks. That's betterhelp.com/medtalks. Thanks again to BetterHelp for sponsoring this episode. You can find a separate episode by Dr. Alex Light on how to do a thorough A to E assessment. So introduce yourself to the patient and ask them how they are. Try to assess whether the patient is orientated to time, place and person. So can you tell me your full name? Do you know where you are at the moment? And do you know what time it is currently? So let's start with A, the airway. Now this is likely to be patent, but if you have any worry that the patient's airway is compromised, then immediately pull that arrest buzzer and put out a crash call for some backup. You can perform any airway maneuvers, such as a head tilt, chin lift, in the meantime. B, breathing. If the patient is acutely unwell and hypoxic, give them the non-rebreathe mask with 15 litres of oxygen. If they are drowsy, then they may be bradyneic or have a reduced respiratory rate, so look out for this because this is a worrying sign which may need some mechanical ventilation. If the patient's hypoxic, then you should do an ABG to assess the blood oxygen concentration. C, circulation. The autonomic response to hypoglycemia may lead to tachycardia. D, disability. So calculate the patient's GCS score. They may be drowsy, confused, have an altered mental state, and look for any obvious focal neurology. E, exposure and everything else. Look for any abdominal scars, any lipodystrophy due to excessive insulin administration. Right, so you've assessed the patient and made any necessary interventions along the way, and you've reassessed at each stage. Now comes the actual management. So you've been told about the patient's glucose reading via the finger prick CBG machine. In order to obtain a more accurate reading, you can send off plasma glucose sample and at the same time send samples for a full blood count, urea and electrolytes, CRP and LFTs. Now, when it comes to the immediate management, you can't wait for the lab glucose result to come back because this is an emergency and you just end up relying on the patient's CBG reading. So how do we manage hypoglycemia? Well, this all depends on the consciousness level of the patient and also whether they are nearby mouth or not. What we need to do is give a quick-acting carbohydrate initially to rapidly bring up the blood glucose concentration, and then we need a long-acting carbohydrate to maintain this. The NICE guidelines state the following step-by-step approach for managing hypoglycemia. So, firstly, if the patient is conscious and hypoglycemic, things like high glucose drink, such as glucojuice or glucozade, alternatively granulated sugar or sugar lumps, and then you recheck the CBGs in 10 minutes, and if necessary, it can be repeated after the 10 minutes. After this treatment, a long-acting carbohydrate, such as a sandwich or a biscuit, will prevent the glucose from falling again. Alternatively, a normal meal, but this will depend on the time and if the meal is soon due. Insulin should not be admitted if it's due, but the dose regimen may need review, and this is the NICE guidance. If, after 3 cycles of this treatment, the hypoglycemia is not responding and it's still below 4, then intramuscular glucagon or IV glucose 10% infusion should be tried. Glucagon is a polypeptide hormone which is produced by the alpha cells of the islets of Langerhans, and it increases blood glucose concentration by mobilizing glycogen which is stored in the liver. The manufacturer advises that it is ineffective in patients whose liver glycogen stores are depleted, and so it should not be used in anyone who has fasted for a long period of time or has adrenal insufficiency, chronic hypoglycemia, or alcohol-induced hypoglycemia. Glucagon may also be less effective in patients taking sulfonylureas, and in these cases, intravenous glucose will be required. In patients who are at risk of Wernicke's encephalopathy, so the alcoholic patients, then IV thiamine should also be given with or after the administration of glucose to prevent this from happening. Now, if the patient is confused and unlikely to tolerate anything orally, then you can try buccal glucogel, which is rubbed into the cheeks and the gums, and it gets absorbed into the bloodstream this way. If the patient is unconscious or nil by mouth, or having seizures, or they're very aggressive, then you should get intravenous access if it's not already there. Ensure that there's no intravenous insulin going through. You can try intramuscular glucagon initially, but have a low threshold for intravenous glucose. So 100 mL of IV glucose 20% through a large gauge needle, but note that this can cause extravasation, so care must be taken with this. Alternatively, you can give 10% of glucose, but you'll need higher volumes, such as 200 mL. Glucose 50% IV infusion is not recommended because it's hypertonic, and so it increases the risk of extravasation injury, and it's viscous, which makes administration difficult. And once the level comes to above 4, then a long-acting carbohydrate should be started, or you can continue the infusion if the patient's nil by mouth. You should always recheck the glucose levels about 10 minutes post-treatment. If an insulin injection is due, it should not be omitted, but a review of the usual insulin regimen may be required. Now, it's really important to be aware that if the symptoms persist once the hyperglycemia has been corrected, then you need to consider some secondary pathologies, such as a head injury, alcohol intoxication, drug intoxication, stroke, cerebral edema, and more. So that's the immediate management. Now, what about the long-term plans? If the patient's having recurrent episodes of hypos, then a change in medications may be required, especially if they lack awareness. And the patients will need a review by the diabetic team and the diabetic nurse specialists for this. For non-diabetic hypoglycemia, the immediate treatment will be the same, so giving a high sugar drink, sugar lumps or tablets, obviously depending on the consciousness level of the patient as we've discussed, because they may need some IV glucose, but the long-term management will depend on the cause of the hypoglycemia. And in order to identify the cause, then further investigations will need to be done, such as an oral glucose tolerance test to look for the growth hormone levels, a serum insulin growth factor, serum ACTH, a CT abdomen and pelvis, and many others. But of course, this doesn't need to be done immediately. If, for example, an insulinoma is diagnosed, then this will require surgical removal. And if a medication such as a quinine is causing the hyperglycemia, then alternatives may need to be considered. Now, of course, if you are concerned about the patient during any of this, then do call your senior and ask for their advice. If you just want them to verify your plan, or if you'd like them to review the patient, then just call them. Okay, guys, so that brings us to the end of this episode where we've looked at hyperglycemia, particularly looking at how we assess and manage patients who do develop hyperglycemia. We've touched on some of the causes and also the symptoms that patients may present with. We hope, as always, that you've enjoyed this episode. Please do remember to give us your feedback. As I said at the start, you can message us on Instagram. Our Instagram handle is medtalks.uk. You can also email us at hellomedtalks@gmail.com. We'd love to hear from you. And we'd also be very grateful if you could just leave a review on the Apple Podcast platform and give us a rating out of 5 stars. That'd be very helpful. And yes, we hope you've enjoyed this episode. Please share it with your friends, peers, and anyone else who may find them useful. Check out all of our other episodes, which are available across podcast platforms absolutely for free. Thanks for listening. Good luck with your revision, and we will bring you lots more content in the future. Speak to you soon. Goodbye.